know being down here is dangerous, and we mustn't be seen.
Yes, Sally Lou, but you know how curious I am. We haven't explored down here at headquarters since the end of the Bush and the beginning of the Obama years.
Yes, and when my pastor husband, Pat Pockets, decided to give up his see-something-say-something secret work for the government, and he quit that dratted clergy response team for the planned Hillary re-education centers, you and I couldn't sneak down here to the Hall of Nightmares anymore.
Last time, Sally Lou, remember?
How could I forget? How could I ever forget them tokens of evil hanging on the wall? And no bar behind. I don't mean big game hunters, elk, and lion trophies.
You mean those pictures? That one of Gary Webb? Oh!
Yes, I certainly do. We're rounding that hallway now to the Gallery of Death. Oh, there it is. Three more. Two of them are labeled Summer 2016. The names say Victor Thorne and Seth Rich. Barbie. Oh, Barbie.
Sally Lou, do you think he is near again?
Shh. Barbie, I hear something exploding. Listen, Barbie, someone talking on a cell.
Oh, that's right, big man. We're drilling and practicing right now what you showed us. All of us here at Antifa headquarters got back okay from meeting with all of you, your gang, and but, you know, someone must have infiltrated, maybe told that uppity New York writer, Ed Klein, about it, and it's in his new book, All Out War. Well, anyway, as sure as my name is Father Antifa, no, of course, the mainstream press hasn't outed me yet that I was Fatherland Security during Bush Jr.'s and the Obamanation years. You know how many ways all of us assets can be retooled, used ad infinitum, ad nauseum. By the way, Georges, it was just great to have my weatherman friends and other leftists meet there in your enclave with the best of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Yes, yes, we learned a lot we can use here domestically. Overthrow could have been so nice in November 2016, but drat it, if too many ordinary Americans didn't come out of their simpering fascist holes in the ground and get that big fascist Trump in. Don't worry, we're clever. So clever that it's rumored that some of my associates disguised a helicopter as an autobus in Vegas, in that Vegas deal. We were able to pick up all the, quote, participants for a good getaway. And I hear rumors that we may even have treated South Sutherland shooter pedophile Devin Kelly in our mental health facility in New Mexico. Shall we say, George, we may have done some facilitated retooling to facilitate things in the future later. If ordinary people would just keep their noses out of our way now, George, we need more congressmen like the one from Illinois. Isn't his name Mike Wigley? I think drawing on my old security clearance from Fatherland Security, I was able to make sure, clandestinely, of course, that the heads of Facebook, Google, and Twitter, our boys, you know, in these government operations that originated from us, they met with Congress. The Utah Congress guy called for getting rid of fake news and Alex Jones and InfoWars. You'll be heartened to know that our boys didn't let us down. Facebook, Google, and Twitter stooges agreed. Yes, we're working with AI to get rid of them. Imagine, big guy, just running his mouth because Fox and some other ridiculously ordinary MSM venues interviewed him, this blabbermouth imam. Imagine that, you know, that supposedly he was telling Mayor Bill de Blasio of the coming truck attacks. And it gave a lot of nerve to that upstart, that dark heart, Hillary's dark heart, Alex Jones in InfoWars, that they could make a dateline, too, with the imam's warnings and not be called fake news. Imagine the nerve. What, George? Yes, I know, drat it. Representative Chris Stewart of Utah had to pipe up saying there are some things reported that are demonstrably true, and there's a huge variety of opinion. How in the world do you identify, quote, fake news without weaponizing it? He had the gall to say, if your opinion is political, then you're weaponizing the news. We'll just keep on making Trump look like a buffoon by careful editing of visuals. We've got to shut up these ordinary Americans. You mean like us, Fatherland Security? Oh, Mrs. Barbie Jones and Sally Lou Pockets, whatever are you doing sneaking around my hall of nightmares? And my name, for your information, is Father Antifa.
Calling a skunk a raccoon don't mean the stink is any less, but I do think, since Barbie and I were here the last time, right after the awful war in Iraq and before Abomination told us nobody never built nothing unless the sickle and hammer gave it to us, things might be a little better. Father Antifa, let's... You know, I see some more light is coming in your windows, and I see God, the ordinary people, no matter what you say, crowding up outside your headquarters, wanting to know the truth.
Get out, ladies. Get out now.
No, ordinary people are not going away. We spoke up on Election Day, November 8th, 2016. This is Lou Caverly. Elizabeth Cupid Caverly and I have been bringing you this hard-hitting news program, The Divided Kingdom. Visit our archives at thedividedkingdom.org. Every program in October 2017 was vital. Hear us on WWCR 4.840 MHz, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, hear us on the Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern, repeating at 11 p.m. Ordinary people, many times Christian, many times American, look into their hearts and then prayerfully act more forcefully than they could ever imagine. Take ordinary citizen Wilford of Sutherland, Texas. In his words, he said, "I was scared to death." Wilford heard the shooter, Devin P. Kelly, inside the South Sutherland Baptist Church. He said he was frightened for everyone, including himself, and in particular, his own family, who lived only one block away. NRA trainer, Wilford got his weapon from his truck, and we are told he managed to shoot an area not covered by Kelly's ballistic vest. Another ordinary American, Lone Star Citizen, came along and gave Wilford a lift. Together at 90 miles per hour, they chased Kelly. Whether or not Kelly killed himself or was shot as his vehicle stopped, two ordinary Americans became heroes that terrible Sunday. First Baptist pastor Frank Pomeroy was at an out-of-town meeting when his 14-year-old daughter was slain.
Lou, I thought as we watched Fox News early on that there were other extraordinary, ordinary Americans. And you know, it was interesting how we learned about this. You simply went out to your car to remove some things that you had left in it, and I guess you turned the radio on and you came in and you said there's been a shooting in a church. So, of course, we began to watch Fox News. Well, there was straight-shooting Texas Governor Abbott, a man 10 times taller than the limitations of his wheelchair. Democrat Henry Cuellar talked lovingly of all his times and relationships in this small town of 400 people. No, not all Democrats are radical leftists or approve
of the anarchy, the violence, and the ideal of revolution that we've been encountering. For in addition to this South Sutherland Baptist Church shooting, we have had the other shocking news that Senator Rand Paul's leftist neighbor had assaulted him, fracturing 5 ribs and puncturing his lung. Alex Jones referred to him as an SJW, and I believe that must be social justice warrior. And that is not a comforting term. And those of us who are tracking the apostasy in the Christian world, we know that the ideal of global social justice is replacing the desire to spread the gospel, the living word of God, around the world. No, it's a very interesting phenomenon that is not only just in politics.
Add that to the Republicans' baseball practice shooting, and one sees very well the fruits of the ongoing plan to destabilize our country's deepest foundations, to destroy our freedom, giving our freedom-giving republic. And of course, we all know what that was all about. That time when that man came out in the field, started shooting up. He shot one member of Congress, and I believe it was in either Arlington or Alexandria or Virginia. They were practicing to have a baseball game among the members of Congress.
And we heard the ominous take on it later, that part of the plan had been to take out a lot of the Republicans so that the Democrats could usurp. And we know where they want to head toward impeachment or something worse.
Yes, that was a dark day, and we've had a lot of dark days lately with the shootings in Las Vegas. We could just name them over and over again. Las Vegas, the most recent one in Texas that shocked us all just a few days ago. Yes, I was out of my car, and I heard the tail end say something about the president has been informed or is being kept informed about this matter. That's all I heard at the time. So I came in, and it didn't take long to figure out what was going on with all the information coming over the TV set.
And now we move on to some articles from Fox News.
One Fox report by Joseph Weber, November 7th, states, Brazil blasts incompetence in response to email hack at Wasserman Schultz-led DNC. Donna Brazile's newly released 2016 campaign, Tell All, accuses the FBI and the Democratic National Committee she used to lead of a bungled response to the email hacks that threw the party into turmoil last summer. In Hacks, and that's the title of the book, I believe, Brazile writes that she only learned of the breach in early June 2016, when then DNC chairwoman, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz informed her and other party officials that the Washington Post was set to publish a story on the matter.
And you know, again, we're going back and forth because these events seem to interplay, and we think again about what happened there in Texas. We have, you see, some truth tellers coming out to a certain degree, and then we have the ordinary Americans that we've been alluding to, and it was just so heartening to hear political figures like Governor Abbott and his Attorney General Ken Paxton clearly identifying this shooting as an outrage against Christians and Americans. Governor Abbott called it an act of evil. Paxton said it broke his heart because he has 4 children of his own. These people are not dehumanized creatures who want to destroy sovereignty, give up private property rights, gun rights, and freedoms of speech and religion. Sadly, the injured had barely been transported from the scene before gun grabbers' poster child Gabby Gifford spoke out. Gabby herself, of course, is an admirable, courageous human being who survived what we have always heard was an assassination attempt on a judge gone wrong. Nothing is ever as it seems. Satan cannot hide and progress his hideous plans when Christians pray and take forceful action. It is significant that Devin P. Kelly, number one, wore a skull mask. You see, that's the culture of death. That's the culture that Planned Parenthood is using to murder and dismember. Even as they murder them, they're making profits from the dismembering. Number two, he was an atheist and hated Christians. Three, it has come out now that he was a pedophile, picking up underage girls. All these indications of who his darkest controller was.
Yes, and one of the most amazing developments in that regard is the news about Donna Brazile, former chairwoman of the Democratic Party. This even while leftists in Boston and all over the country yesterday were organized and instructed to scream helplessly at the sky, and that's in quotes, on the commemoration of Trump's election victory. Paul Joseph Watson calls this, quote, mentally deranged temper tantrums, and says, quote, good luck attacking voters with that platform, unquote. This is a diversion compared to the news leaked on Alex Jones on Friday, November 3rd. Ex-military caller Zach gave information of planning massive attacks in the U.S. by Somali operatives. Within 2 hours, Alex Jones reports, Zach was picked up by the FBI and is in military custody. Please pray for this ordinary American who has taken a courageous risk to warn us all. And now more about the Donna Brazile story. Brazile describes Wasserman Schultz's tone as so casual. And again, this is from, I believe it's an actual book called Hacks by Donna Brazile. This is in quotes. On June 14th, Debbie invited the Democratic Party officers to a conference call to alert us to the story about hacking the DNC that would be published in the Washington Post the following day. I guess that should say that a story would be published. Brazil writes, quote, that call was the first time we'd heard that there was a problem, unquote. About 5 weeks later, at the start of the Democratic National Convention, WikiLeaks released more than 19,000 emails, including ones that suggested Wasserman Schultz had helped Clinton win the nomination over rivals Bernie Sanders and others. The revelations ultimately led to Wasserman Schultz of Florida stepping down and Brazile becoming interim DNC chairwoman. And the second Fox article by John Fund says, most Democrats are publicly muting their criticism of Donna Brazile, a longtime party operative whose new tell-all book has shaken Washington with his revelations about how the Hillary Clinton campaign took control of the supposedly neutral Democratic National Committee. But privately, they are furious at Brazil's charges that Clinton controlled the DNC and tilted the primary playing field to help her defeat Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. The book entitled Hacks, the inside story of the break-in and breakdown that put Donald Trump in the White House, came out Tuesday, but Brazile released excerpts last week and has been giving media interviews. Brazile, a longtime Clinton ally, was tapped in mid-2016 to lead the embattled DNC after former chair W. Wasserman Schultz resigned in July after leaked internal emails showed key members of her staff speaking critically of Bernie Sanders in his primary fight against Clinton. And this is in quotes, I completed my review of the DNC, and I did find the cancer, Brazile said she admitted to Sanders in September 2016. Brazile continued, I explained that the cancer was Clinton, and she had exerted this control of the party long before she became the nominee, unquote. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, a leading Democrat progressive, when asked on Thursday if the DNC was rigged to favor Clinton, responded with one word, yes. Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat of Hawaii, also called the primary, quote-unquote, rigged. She stepped down as a Democratic Party vice chair during the primaries over her frustration with the Democratic National Committee. Brazile also said she pondered a move to replace Clinton as the Democratic nominee after the candidate contracted pneumonia, covered up the illness, and then collapsed in New York at a 9/11 memorial ceremony.
a caution. Rush Limbaugh said that Donna Brazile knows the DNC people so well because she is them. So we would do well to note the frequent Russia hacking meme described as being in her new book, Hacks. Without our having read Hacks, we'd still bet that there is no real coverage of the WikiLeaks 19,000 emails that revealed connections between campaign figure John Podesta's group and the murderous spirit cooking, etc. Instead, showing Donna Brazile is no populist, no complete truth teller about the evils around Podesta's group, but only a cover-up facilitator, at least in this regard, the Fox article quotes her as saying of Trump advisor Roger Stone, that sleazy, white-haired Nixon operative, who was a big supporter of Donald Trump, tweeted that soon it would be Podesta's time in the barrel. We didn't know when the hammer would fall, but we were as ready as we could be, Brazile writes. Perhaps the area of greatest truthfulness and credibility in Brazile's book is born of her own personal terror, her fear for her very own life. WorldNet Daily, November 6, 2017. Donna Brazile's fear for her life reignites Seth Rich murder. Murdered DNC staffer Seth Rich. It was just a botched robbery, they said. Move along, there's nothing to see here, they said. Quit being paranoid and assuming there's some conspiracy behind the random murder, they said. So, if it were merely a botched robbery that killed DNC data staffer Seth Rich, why in the world would the former interim chair of the Democratic National Committee fear for her life, believing snipers might shoot and kill her after the mysterious murder of Rich? Brazile's upcoming book, Hacks, the inside story of the break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump in the White House, she writes about her fears following the July 10, 2016 unsolved murder of Rich. In fact, she dedicated the book to Rich, whom she calls a, quote, patriot. Brazile, who served as interim DNC chairwoman after Rich's murder, even revealed she felt her own life was in danger during the 2016 campaign. She says she closed her office window blinds so snipers couldn't spot her. Brazile installed surveillance cameras at her home, and she worried that her office was bugged with a listening device. Brazile's account prompted internet journalist Matt Drudge, founder of the Drudge Report, to tweet about the revelation Saturday. As WorldNet Daily has reported, Rich, 27, was the DNC's voter expansion data director. He had accepted a position with Democratic Party nominee Hillary Clinton's campaign just before his death. And let's let Lou go on with this WorldNet Daily article to get a little more background about the Seth Rich incident.
In the summer of 2016, in the heat of a highly contentious presidential campaign, Rich was fatally shot in the back in Washington, D.C., near his apartment in an affluent neighborhood. Rich had been working for the DNC at a time when emails from the organization were provided to WikiLeaks for publication. The Metropolitan Police Department and Washington Mayor Muriel Bowers insist Rich was randomly killed during a botched robbery. But others are doubtful, because he was found with his wallet, credit cards, and other valuables. The intersection where DNC staffer Seth Rich was found, conscious, and this is in quotes, conscious and breathing with apparent gunshot wounds to the back, unquote, according to a July 10, 2016 police report. I believe that's probably a photo that didn't get captured in this copy. Probably a caption. And here's a quote reported by the Washington Post. Brazile writes that she was haunted by the still unsolved murder of DNC's data staffer Seth Rich and feared for her own life, shutting the blinds to her office window so snipers could not see her, and installing surveillance cameras at her home. Talk show host Rush Limbaugh brought up the curious revelations during his Monday show. So she's coming out now, and she says the Seth Rich murder haunted her to the point that she felt the need to close her shades, that she feared for her own life. Now, if there's anybody, here's the critical thinking part. This is the part that's supposed to dazzle you. If there's anybody that knows these people, it's Donna Brazil. There's new two ways of looking at this. She feared for her life after a random robbery gone bad that left a man dead. She feared for her life after a random crime, senseless, needless, random crime, left a former member of the DNC staff dead. She feared for her life. Donna Brazil knows these people. Donna Brazil is these people. So that's why this is eerily curious and interesting. As World Nate Daily has reported, WikiLeaks is offering a $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of Rich's killer. Jack Berkman, head of the profiling project, is offering $105,000. One American News Network offered up $100,000. The Metropolitan Police Department, $25,000. And businessman and investor Martin Shirelli, $100,000. The DNC, however, has offered no reward to help find the killer of its staffer. Instead, the DNC honored its murdered employee by dedicating a bike rack outside his headquarters in Rich's memory. The latest DNC email released by WikiLeaks was dated May 18, 2016, just weeks before Rich was murdered. The emails exposed the party's bias against Democratic Party presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. After the emails were released in July 2016, DNC Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned. In her new book, Brazil suggests Hillary's campaign took over the DNC and effectively rigged the Democratic Party primary so she would win the nomination. D.C. lobbyist and attorney Jack Berkman, who has been on the hunt for Rich's killer, has filed a federal lawsuit that accuses Hillary and the DNC of rigging the 2016 presidential primary. The complaint also demands the release of the hacked DNC server and references the, quote, unsolved murder of Seth Rich, unquote. The complaint poses the theory that Mr. Rich was seeking to expose DNC's bias against Bernie Sanders when he was murdered. It argues, quote, the server would enable forensic experts to investigate whether Mr. Rich surreptitiously downloaded emails, unquote. Berkman claims MPD, I think that's Metropolitan Police Department, officials are withholding key evidence from the public and obstructing the Rich investigation for political purposes. He separately filed a lawsuit against the MPD, demanding the release of Rich's medical examiner's report, autopsy documents, and ballistics reports, documents that are typically made public during murder investigations. As WorldNet Daily reported, the profiling project concluded in June that Rich's murder was most likely, quote, committed by a hired killer or serial murderer, because the crime scene was very organized to the point of being sanitized, unquote. Rich's story has been largely ignored by establishment media.
Perhaps it is almost sunset for Hillary Clinton's political career and public life. We have from the Washington Times, Monday, November 6th, by Stephen Dinan, FBI originally deemed Clinton grossly negligent in handling his secret emails. The FBI originally planned to say that Hillary Clinton was grossly negligent in her handling of secret emails, a top senator said Monday, revealing early drafts of the statement that James B. Comey drew up as FBI director. Senator Charles E. Grassley, Iowa Republican and chairman of the Judiciary Committee, demanded that the FBI detail why Mr. Comey mixed that phrase in later drafts. Gross negligence would seem to be a high enough standard to have prosecuted Mrs. Clinton, though Mr. Comey ended up not recommending charges, saying that while the former First Lady, senator, and top diplomat was clueless, he couldn't prove she knew how badly she was risking national security. Mr. Grassley said in a letter demanding answers from current FBI Director Christopher Wray, although Director Comey's original version of his statement acknowledged that Secretary Clinton had violated the statute prohibiting gross negligence in the handling of classified information, he nonetheless exonerated her in that early May second draft statement anyway, arguing that this part of the statute should not be enforced. Mr. Grassley said the law governing mishandling of classified information uses a gross negligence standard, which would seem to snare Mrs. Clinton. Mrs. Clinton used a secret email account tied to a server she kept at her home in New York to do her official government business. Hundreds of classified emails were sent to and from her account, including some labeled as top secret. The FBI investigated, and Mr. Comey said the breach of security was serious, but he added that the Justice Department had always been reluctant to make cases unless it could prove someone knowingly intended to risk national security. It was revealed recently that Comey began drafting an exoneration of Mrs. Clinton well before agents interviewed her or other key witnesses about her behavior. The Senate Judiciary Committee said as many as 17 witnesses were still awaiting interviews when Mr. Comey began drafting his statement. Mr. Comey has said publicly that he decided to make a statement about Mrs. Clinton after her husband, former President Bill Clinton, had an airport tarmac meeting with Attorney General Loretta E. Lynch in June 2016. He said he felt that compromised Ms. Lynch's independence. And we remember that incident very well, I have to interject. We really cannot fathom that that happened. But going on to the article, days after the tarmac meeting, Mr. Comey announced the conclusion of his probe into Mrs. Clinton. Saying he wasn't recommending charges to the Justice Department, Ms. Lynch quickly agreed, saying she accepted his recommendations. But the fact that Mr. Comey began drafting a public statement well before the tarmac meeting has spurred new questions, and the changes in the statement will only feed those. Mr. Grassley said he wants to see all iterations, including metadata, to try to figure out when and why the changes were made. In an original statement that Mr. Grassley says appears to have been drafted May 2nd, Mr. Comey said there was, quote, evidence to support a conclusion that Secretary Clinton and others used the private email server in a manner that was grossly negligent with respect to the handling of classified material. He also wrote in that draft that, quote, the sheer volume of information that was properly classified as secret at the time it was discussed on email, that is excluding the up-classified emails, supports an inference that the participants were grossly negligent in their handling of that information. By June 10th, those sentences were deleted. And Mr. Comey wrote, although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. Mr. Grassley said the FBI's response should be provided in an unclassified manner, and the senator made clear he believes he has a right to release any unclassified material. Well, we really can say cover-up. We can spell it C-O-V-E-R-U-P. But is it now time for the globalists to just throw Hillary to the sharks? There's another headline, isn't there, Lou?
Yes, there is. The headline reads, "The Clintons are done in politics." That was the headline in the Washington Times, Monday, November 6th, in an article by Jennifer Harper. The damage has already been done. Hillary is now involved in the third big scandal. First, there was the Russian uranium deal. The Russian dossier was deal number two. And now, number three, rigging the Democratic nomination, summarizes Fox Business Network anchor Stuart Varney. He went on to say, quote, it's hard to tell why Donna Brazile did this. By telling all, she's divided her own party. Maybe she's selling books with dramatic headlines. Maybe. But perhaps she's fed up with all the excuses Hillary and the Democrats are using for their loss to Donald Trump. Either way, the Clintons are done in politics, and the Democrats are going to struggle to unify behind a winning message and a winning candidate, if they can find one, says Mr. Varney. Indeed, there have been many dramatic headlines about the book in the last 24 hours. Just a few of the many. Quote, Democrats shaken and angered by Brazil book. That was in Politico. Brazil revelations stir confusion, anger among Democrats. In The Hill. By waiting a year to tell all, Donna Brazile gets tongues wagging from the Daily Beast. Brazile breaks Hillary's spell over the Dems from Fox News. Meanwhile, Miss Brazile is busy. She is beginning a stint as a visiting fellow at the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard University, where she will, quote, write about understanding American democracy after the cyber attack on the 2016 election, unquote, the organization advises.
Ooh, that's the revolving door. You know, those people who are up far enough, those minions of power, they never have to fear too much. Their bread and butter will be waiting on another plate. But actually, the upshot of the end of this article you have is that perhaps there's going to be a fading out of the Democratic advantage in the 2018 midterm elections. So that will be very interesting to see. Among registered voters, they say that it's kind of at a dead heat. Democratic candidate 48% and a Republican 46%. So at 60% of Americans say they're inclined to look around for someone new in their congressional districts. And now, getting back to this overall war, the internal war that is trying to take down our country between what we call deep state or the satanic forces of Antifa and others, the CIA-connected people, all of this, the people who do not want the good part of America to continue, and we think there's some very good CIA people who do want it to continue, but we can look back at all the patsies from Oswald to McVeigh and others. And so the Washington Post has an interesting article here. This is Eva Moravec, or Moravec, and Mark Berman, November 7th. Texas church gunman escaped from mental health facility in 2012 after threatening military superiors. And note that I'm interjecting here. Pay close attention to this aborted incident in 2012. And if Kelly was under ongoing mind control, perhaps there was an attempt to use him as a patsy, and it went awry due to good men's vigilance. So here's the article. New Braunfels, Texas. The gunman who opened fire in a church outside San Antonio, killing at least 26 people, escaped from a mental health facility in 2012 after he was caught sneaking guns onto an Air Force base and, quote, attempting to carry out death threats, end of quote, made against military superiors, according to a police report. The report said officers with the El Paso, Texas police were dispatched to a bus terminal after Devin P. Kelly's escape from a behavioral facility about 7 miles away in New Mexico. Officers wrote they were told Kelly, who intended to take a bus out of the state, quote, was a danger to himself and others at the time, and noted that he, quote, was also facing military criminal charges. This incident occurred the same year that Kelly was court-martialed. He was charged with abusing his wife and her son between April 2011 and April 2012, and then sentenced in November 2012, according to Air Force documents. The El Paso police report was first obtained Tuesday by KPRC, a Houston television station. This revelation came as authorities continued to seek a fuller portrait of Kelly and probed a breakdown in military protocols that failed to flag his domestic violence conviction, which should have kept them from buying guns. And again, I, Elizabeth Cavalli, have to interject. This seems to be a red flag, this strange military incompetence. We've seen this before. 9/11, anybody? Going back to the Moravec and Berman article, this tiny Sutherland Springs has mourned a church attack. More chilling details have emerged of how Kelly, clad in all black and wearing a mask with a skull on it, methodically tried to take as many victims as possible while he stalked the pews of First Baptist Church. Officials say that Kelly was inside the church for a lengthy period of time, moving around freely as he gunned down people gathered for Sunday morning services. One woman who was wounded during the carnage described Kelly firing at church goers who tried to leave, shooting round after round at those cowering or wounded on the church's floor. David Brown, whose mother, Farida, was shot in her legs, said she described Kelly firing 4 shots into the torso of a woman to her left. With every shot, she was crying, Brown said of the woman. She was just staring at my mom while she tried to comfort her. As he fired rounds into the woman, Farida Brown held her hand, telling her she was heading to heaven. When the massacre was over, more than 2 dozen people were fatally wounded and 20 others were injured, half of them critically. Officials said the 26, and I believe that's now 27, people killed included the unborn child of one of the victims at the church. Authorities said they were still reconstructing what happened inside the church and are unable to say how long the gunman fired or how many shots were fired, but they said he had ample time to fire at churchgoers. I can tell you when the first call came in, the Wilson County Sheriff's Office arrived within 4 minutes, Freeman Martin, a regional director with the Texas Department of Public Safety, said at a briefing Tuesday. I can tell you, 4 minutes is a long time during an active shooter situation. When the gunfire ended, nearly everyone inside had been injured or killed, Martin said. Kelly was shot twice by a local man who heard what was happening and responded to the church with his own rifle. The gunman fled and ultimately shot himself in the head, officials said. And I think there's a little bit more here that we want to get. The shooting in a place where gun culture is deeply rooted has prompted sharply different responses. Some residents of tiny Sutherland Springs, a tiny community southeast of San Antonio, said after the attack that it could have been stopped if people inside the church had weapons. In Washington, Democratic lawmakers sought to force a vote on a bill establishing a select committee on preventing gun violence. Speaking in Seoul, meanwhile, President Trump asserted that tougher gun laws would not have stopped the mass shooting, saying that hundreds more may have died had another man not been able to neutralize the attacker with a gun of his own. But how Kelly obtained his weapons has become the source of a separate federal investigation. Kelly was convicted of domestic violence while serving in the Air Force, making him the latest mass killer with such abuse in his past. On Monday, the Air Force said it failed to follow policies for alerting federal law enforcement about this conviction, which meant he was prohibited from buying or possessing firearms, according to Air Force spokeswoman Ann Stefanik. While serving at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, Kelly was convicted of abusing his wife and her child. He spent a year at a Navy brig in San Diego and was then kicked out of the military in 2014 with a bad conduct discharge. Court-martialed documents made public Monday evening state that Kelly kicked, choked, and struck his wife in 2011 and 2012. He also struck her young child on the head and body with a force likely to produce death or grievous bodily harm, according to the documents. And that was a quote. This information was not in the National Criminal Information Center database, which meant that despite a law meant to keep Kelly from obtaining firearms, his gun purchases were apparently able to proceed. And again, here we at the Divided Kingdom have to be aghast at this oversight of this crazed individual. Or was this cleverly by design, this incompetence? The article says he had purchased 4 guns since 2014, one in each year, according to federal officials. 2 of those guns were purchased from a retailer, Academy Sports, after he passed federal background checks in 2016 and 2017. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. How could he pass all these background checks? Kelly also passed a background check needed for a job as a security guard at a water park over the summer. You know, this is at a time when authorities continue to urge us to see something, say something. Is there such a thing as planned diabolical incompetence? I really do wonder. The Air Force has launched a review of his case to determine how it handled his criminal records and whether records in their cases have been reported correctly, Stefanik said. Police and court records across 3 states paint the picture of a young man with a sometimes violent private life. Dave Ivey, who identified himself as Kelly's uncle, apologized to the shooting victims in an interview with NBC News. I never in a million years could have believed Devin would be capable of this kind of thing, Ivey said. My family will suffer because of his coward actions. So we could go on more about the details of there was a young man covered in blood who escaped the church, and he sprinted across the field and collapsed inside the convenience store between two aisles, gasping about a shooter killing everyone in the church. And the two people there who were running that store, and I believe the name of this is Teresa's Kitchen, and that was tucked in the corner of the convenience store, and these wonderful, ordinary Americans were planning a Thanksgiving dinner there. And the article says, with Thanksgiving approaching, local residents are invited to a feast on November 19th at the community center, which was Terry's idea. And that was Teresa, I'm sure. The feast will continue as planned, they said. We're still going to put that dinner on, and I think that's going to make us a little stronger, Flores said. At least it helps a little. A little is better than nothing. That's sort of the way our radio program is. A little is better than nothing. One time I believe that I looked in Isaiah about what we should do with our radio work, and I saw that Isaiah was told to cry out till the last city is wasted. So that's probably the goal of Lou and me. And if you want to help us stay on the air, Alex Jones said of these smaller programs, they magnify his work, and he's under great attack, vicious attack, and we ask you to pray for him and for InfoWars. We really and truly know that God is watching over our country. It was just so heartening to see a picture of Mike Pence the other day, and that we now were going to send aid to persecuted Christians directly and not through the UN. Trump pulled us out of UNESCO. You see, God is giving us a little more time before the one world order of government and religion comes into being. We really do need this, and we have so much to talk about with Antifa. If we can't get it all in tonight, we've got to get more of it in. These people who were shrieking up to the skies, there's a lot more to it than that. And we might just begin here with this excerpt for this wonderful book. Don't forget about this book by Dinesh D'Souza, The Big Lie. We got it at Barnes & Noble, and I'm sure you could still get it. Here's a little bit of background on the Refuse Fascism, the group's core, and I hope that I can find what I want to find here. He says, I want to focus on post-election violence because that is very unusual in America. After all, the election is over and the president has been elected. Nevertheless, there were massive protests and disruptions at Trump's inaugural events. These protests were organized by a mélange of groups, the most prominent of which seemed to be one called Refuse Fascism. According to one of its flyers, it is the fascist character of the Trump-Pence regime which renders it illegitimate and a peril to humanity. And, of course, we've seen these New York Times ads. We've been seeing everything that they planned for November 8th. Now, here's the bombshell, I think, in this book by Dinesh D'Souza. The group's call to resistance was signed by, among others, actor Ed Asner, activist Bill Ayers, comedians Margaret Cho and Rosie O'Donnell, and author Alice Walker. Now, yes, it's not happy news to hear that actor Ed Asner is a part of this, but the thing that floors you is the next activist, Bill Ayers. That isn't what you would term Bill Ayers, is it, Lou?
I've always thought the word terrorist might be a better word. And rather than activist, he's accused of having been a part of protests that resulted in, I think, the deaths of some people way back in either the 60s or early 70s during the Vietnam with Weatherman. Yep, those violence, those of us old enough remember that name, the Weatherman, responsible for all kinds of, I would call them terrorist actions. I don't think there's any other word for it. That was the time when you had the Black Panthers active. You had all kinds of left-wing groups. You had groups coming into colleges, threatening to burn down buildings, rioting in the streets. I remember that well.
And we must highlight another new book that has just come out, Edward Klein's book, All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. Again, that is All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And he was discussing Antifa also on InfoWars on Tuesday, November 6th. And he said everything really began December 16th, 2016, at a dinner when Valerie Jarrett invited Susan Rice. And they began to unmask a lot of names of Trump supporters. And this was the start of the collusion with Russia story, the lie. And Edward Klein came out with some very interesting, I'd say, bombshells. Yes, we've heard about deep state, the rogue elements, and they're losing files, they're leaking things to discredit Trump. And this is what he said about Antifa, that there are connections between Antifa and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and their meetings in Syria, where Americans get tips on how to make bombs, etc. So you see that little satirical interlude in which Fatherland Security was accosted by those ordinary Americans, Sally Lou Pockets and Barbie Jones. There was a kernel of real truth there, that we are getting this report from this new book that there is a collaboration between Antifa, the Soros-funded group. And it isn't just Soros. You've heard the Weathermen are involved. This is a big satanic thing. And if Al-Qaeda and ISIS are somewhat involved instructing the people, my word, this is becoming a lot more like what George Washington saw, if that story is accurate, and I believe that it may well be, when his 99-year-old aide, Anthony Sherman, recounted the story of Washington being visited as he was at prayer at Valley Forge in that harsh winter by an angel. And the angel made three visits and was shown three wars that would endanger our republic. And, of course, the first was the Revolutionary War. The second had the angel, I think, wore something on its head that said Union. Anyway, it was the Civil War. But the third one was the greatest peril of all, and as he watched, he saw a red cloud come from Europe and come across the ocean to America. And I believe that he was assured that America would prevail. But, of course, man only sees things in part. God sees the whole thing. But I do certainly believe that God put Donald Trump and his precious family into the White House for a time like this, and we need to continually pray for him. Another person who was weighing in about Antifa and its connections was William F. Jasper, and of course he is the editor of The New American, and this comes from the John Birch Society. He said that really the Communist Revolutionary Party is behind Antifa, and he says it's just a front group, Antifa, that actually comes out of the same address. So when we talk about Weathermen, communists, Marxists, anarchists, we're talking about people who hate the ideas and the ideals that all of you and I and Lou live by. We love our private property. Don't you love your little home if you have a home? Of course you do. Don't you love that little piece of land that you have? But we have Bob Avakian, head of the American Revolutionary Communist Party. He said, we will peacefully bring about the overthrow of President Trump. I'm not sure how peacefully and what they intend, but we will have to get into it a lot more. Pastor Ernie Sanders sent us an article on Refuse Fascism, and it was their statement, refusefascism.org. And this is what he said. The first time I went to this site, it called for violence against police and legislators. 2 days later, this was removed. Isn't that interesting, Lou? These lies.
Well, it's quite clear that the people like this cannot abide the truth, that they'll cover their real tracks, that they'll cover their motives, that they'll try to make it appear that they want peaceful resolution of their conflicts, but they don't.
you almost made a little Freudian slip. Resolution went to revolution. And that's what it will be. There's a pretense that they're peaceful. And what upsets us a lot is the way the colleges have been taken over by these aging hippie countercultural weathermen, whatever they are. They don't represent ordinary Americans, do they?
Absolutely not. These professors, all too many of them, and of course there are exceptions, all too many of them just want, well, what the more violent hippie types wanted in the 60s. And many of them are the grown up, if you can call it that, results of those revolutionary days of the 1960s.
And again, this is deeper than just a political movement. It is a spiritual war in which Satan eventually wants the one world government, and he'll do anything for the bloodlust, for the sacrifice of those 60-plus million babies. He will want war. He will want anything he can in which God's beautiful creation, man, is destroyed and diminished. All of these things that we're facing, basically, I believe, have intensified because the pastors in America, many of them, did not want to know the truth, and they're like dumb dogs lying there. They're asleep. Some of you are not asleep, and some of you are praying very fiercely for the return of Jesus Christ to our land. We pray that there will be repentance and that there will be a greater reawakening again, the way there was in the 18th century in America. Anything is possible if enough of us pray, and if we pray fervently and read the scripture, God can do miraculous things. I wouldn't even be here on the radio if God hadn't inspired a young man whose parents were taught by my mother to say, Phoebe Cuppett needs disability in the year 1976. Let's pay her a salary. I would have had to go back to Pennsylvania and stay ill and never progress to this microphone. Lou and I can tell you many, many other things that have brought us to this point. God watched over us. There's a plan for your life, too. Please tell others about our program and write to us at P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. God bless you, and let's have victory in America and not let Antifa take over. Good night.